notice how this idea of applied voltage versus reactive voltage comes from the correct perception of Ohm's law as a description of reactants. Yet it's never taught that way. It's overly simplified, pared down, and then taught to beginning students as if it's a law, but it's not. It's an oversimplification of a complicated situation involving impedances and reactances, and that's the only correct way to teach it. Any other way is a sham. So when you start thinking, and also current is a fiction. So when you start thinking the correct way, see, what it does is it gets your brain to start to analyze the situation in the correct manner. Instead of going, I don't know, you know, because you don't know, because you've been trained all wrong to analyze AC circuits or DC circuits, and that's it, as if that's the whole world of electrodynamic theory. It's not. There's a whole nother world that the conclusions you draw are going to be all different, because the facts as the premise for those conclusions are going to be different. And it's significant. So Ohm's law, correctly stated for the umpteenth time, it's worth repeating, is not voltage squared divided by resistance equals watts, because that's an oversimplification as well. It's two different voltages. It's applied voltage, which is the cause for each event, and then reactive voltage is the result. In a simulator environment, that's per time frame of computation. And also the electrical engineer, if he's doing his calculations, he's going to be doing it per unit of time. And so you have to discriminate between the two voltages because they're not the same. One is applied and the other is the result. And the result comes about due to the duration and also of the analysis and also the impedances and the resistances. What are they? You know, producing the change in voltage one way or another. So once we think this way, current goes out the window because it's of no significance whatsoever. And this has everything to do with all types of circuitry, both conventional and non-conventional. Current, but see, now that's the problem. Current is a convenience for conventional circuitry. So it does have relevance to the technician who works in the field to make life easier for him, but only for conventional circuitry in which you have a sustaining, a continuity of change in voltage stretched out over time, many, many instances over very short spans of time to make it look like it's continuous, and then you think, aha, that must be, and then you derive from that the conclusion of current. But you can't do that with what I deal with, because there's no continuity. You don't see the voltage reappear until half a cycle later. So where's the current? I mean, instantaneous movement, you know, come on. It was never there in the first place. It was always instantaneous movement, but it was never obvious. So now it's obvious, and it's not instantaneous movement. It's it's delayed response is what it amounts to, but not due to movement. So rather than a frequent response, we end up with a delayed response in which we have to wait half a cycle for the response to occur, which becomes the input, the applied voltage, for the next half cycle. And yet nobody thinks about it that way. They think voltage manifests current, and current is the result. Well, I'm saying that reactive voltage, due to various impedances and resistances within a framework of time, is the substitute for what we call current, namely the result of applied voltage. But because we don't distinguish between the two types of voltages. We don't even have the two types of voltages, much less have to distinguish between them. We don't. We just, voltage is all the same as far as we're concerned. Well, no, you have, when you analyze it, you have to put labels on everything. And the appropriate label is what's your cause, your input, and what's your result, the output. See? We say that much, you know. Input has to equal output. But when you're dealing with reactive voltages, under the circumstances in which I operate, they don't equal. More often than not, they do not equal. And it doesn't necessarily mean the voltage is going to be greater. It could be less. It could go either way. It all depends on the circumstances, what you're dealing with. So conservation goes out the window when Ohm's law is taught this way, when it's taught the correct way, because it gives you the freedom to do as you please. Because that's the essential nature of electricity. It's a wild stallion. We put a bit and a bridle in the thing and say that we've trained this horsey to stop being a wild stallion. And you know what? That's like preventing a 100-year flood versus a 10-year flood, or a 1,000-year flood versus a 100-year flood. You take extra measures to prevent a flood. And so all you've really done is you've succeeded at preventing flooding that occurs more frequently, such as a 10-year flood. But you still got the 100-year flood to deal with because you didn't take enough precautions. And you can never take enough precautions. There'll always be a flood that comes along eventually that will screw you. And when we say a 100-year flood, that's a statistical average. It has nothing to, I mean, you could have 200-year floods back to back within the same year, and then not have another 100-year flood for another 200 years. So there's no evenness. Mother Nature doesn't say, okay, I'll be nice and give it to you once every 100 years on your 100th birthday. It doesn't work that way. It's statistics. When we're dealing with macro behavior patterns, all we can do is hope for statistics that it's somewhat accurate. And most of the time, it probably is. But when you get that surprise explosion in the substation transformer or on the pole transformer, guess what? That's your 100-year flood, which came a little early this century and surprised you.